George Floyd.
Murder.
Murder and manslaughter.
The murder of George Floyd.
Peaceful protest overnight in the Twin Cities.
They've been very peaceful. The crowd continues to be peaceful.
8:46, 8 minutes and 46 seconds.
9 minutes and 29 seconds.
Actually, 8 minutes and 46 seconds.
By the way, that particular technique is not authorized by the MPD.
Is this a trained Minneapolis Police Department technique?
It is not.
When I heard that, I really wanted to get up off my chair and yell, bullshit.
From what I've seen of the videotape, the photograph, and the police training manual, they look pretty identical.
Were you trained in MRT, the maximal restraint technique?
Yes.
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 Yes. All the police officers were trained in the MRT.
George Floyd says, I got shot last time.
I got shot the same way as officers before.
Did you shoot him?
No, I didn't shoot him. No.
You helped to train Officer Alex King. What did you think of him?
I probably trained a few thousand people. He was probably one of the top two.
This call is from a federal prison.
Hi, Derek, it's Liz.
Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. I have to say, I have told everyone, and I've done a couple shows about the incredible eye-opening documentary that just came out, The Fall of Minneapolis, and my guest today is behind that documentary, and I have been so honored to have her on and have you guys listen to her and hear about a little bit about her in the background. So thank you for joining me, Liz Collin. I am such a huge fan, and your work is incredible. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mel. I have a mutual respect for you for sure. Thank you for all you do. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And I have to tell you, I was so outraged after I watched The Fall of Minneapolis. Not that, you know, you and I had been following this and seeing that, but the way that you put it together, I had never seen before. And I wanted to go first to you to tell the audience a little bit about your background, because you've been doing this a long time. And then we'll get into what brought you to that story.
Yeah, so I was a mainstream media reporter for nearly 20 years, kind of a survivor, if you will. But I've certainly been troubled by the media, you know, the last, I would say, like 5 or 6 years of my career. But I was working in my home state of Minnesota, in Minneapolis, at the CBS affiliate. I was a longtime anchor there. And I married the president of the police union several years before all of this. And all of a sudden, my marriage became a huge issue. In the wake of George Floyd, as everybody kind of got caught up in cancel culture against law enforcement and their families. So I was demoted off the anchor desk, sort of lost my position in all of this. But I say that, you know, the story really isn't about me. That's just sort of background, how I was placed in this environment. But it was about the fact that journalists weren't doing their job from the beginning. So I kept track of this story very closely as a reporter, and I left mainstream media, put out a book about all this, joined independent media instead because I wanted to be able to sleep at night. But the book was called They're Lying, The Media, The Left, and The Death of George Floyd. And I thought, you know, only so many people take the time to actually read nowadays. Let's Right. do this documentary, make it available for free, and try to wake people up to what's really going on.
Yeah, and you did. And I have to say, I think it's important that your husband is affiliated with the police force there, because one of the biggest parts I think people never saw weren't the cops that are involved, who should never have been charged, certainly shouldn't be in jail. The periphery cops and the ones that you had in the documentary, watching these people, what happened to their lives. Nobody thought about that, and how you show how they burnt out the police station. Certainly the chief has a lot to answer for, but this then caused a countrywide, you know, attack on all the police, on, certainly defund the police, no bail, no jail, to the point that, I'm from New York City. 2,500 cops have retired or moved away. We have no law and order. So it really was the spark of that. So tell me a little bit about those police that you interviewed and their, people have to understand this war on the cops was not a war on the cops. It was a war on this country.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well said. So these are, I think, in the wake of all this, Minneapolis really lost the best of the best when it comes to their law enforcement. You had a police department that had nearly 900 police officers in early May of 2020, and that has dwindled barely to 500 left now 3 years later. More importantly, they are kind of a fire department now in a way. They're not doing proactive police work. Why would you if you are in a profession where you're faced each and every day with not only can you lose your job, but you can lose your freedom too. After they saw what happened. And that was kind of the point of this film too, The Fall of Minneapolis, Mel. It was, here are the facts that were hidden from you. Ask yourself why they were hidden from you and make up your own mind. I don't really play that big a part in the documentary for a reason. I'm just asking a few questions, but I think what is, so poignant about this story is these, rough on the edges cops that are, everybody breaks down. Not one single person that I interviewed in the course of this documentary didn't start crying. And that's actually kind of rare in interviews to even happen, but it really, I think, speaks to the fact that these are people that didn't want to leave this profession. They cared about this city, and they were served up to the angry mob in the wake of all of this.
Yeah. And they also, I think it's important. I think they wanted to tell their story and that you had given them the chance to actually say what they believed and what they wanted to say. Now, the other part is that is very shocking. And I don't think anyone till you put this out really saw this was the behavior of George Floyd himself. And it's terrible that George Floyd died. But looking at that and watching the behavior and then you going through his past a little, but just from the beginning of when the first cop knocked on the window all the way through and watching it transpire, you have to look at it and think, well, what were these cops supposed to do? And we this is a huge man who wasn't admitting that he had just swallowed drugs or whatever. He's freaking out and on such a level nonstop. They called for help. They called for this. All those cops were in a terrible position. Then people are coming in and then you lay out his history and this and that. And now at this point in our lives in America, after watching that whole thing and how you really go through who George Floyd was, what happened that day, how he was behaving that day. Now to think that we have statues and murals all over this country, we've had Christopher Columbus and Thomas Jefferson and all of these Ben Franklin statues taken down all over the country and George Floyd statues erected. Just the whole big picture is shocking to me. So what are your thoughts on the portrayal of George Floyd that day and now?
Yeah, this is the very first time in Minneapolis police history that they withheld the body camera footage in any case from the public. And one would wonder why that was. Well, because there was so much in that body camera footage that contradicted the narrative that they were serving up from day one. That includes that he couldn't breathe before Derek Chauvin arrived on scene. This also includes the fact that he says he's claustrophobic and he's pulled out of a cramped car himself as they try to put him in a squad car. He talks about how his mother just died and she died 2 years earlier. He denies again and again taking anything because the officers clearly recognize that something is off with him. He himself asks to be laid on the ground. You have Thomas Lane who calls for an ambulance 36 seconds after that happens. So again, there's so much. And also including the officers talking about this maximal restraint technique, this MRT. Right. That's a big crux, which I know we'll talk about as well. But you also have a black officer arresting George Floyd. But we're told the very next day that this is the most racist police incident basically in U.S. history. Right. That's what we're told. So there's a reason that the video was hidden. I really no doubt about that. Of course, that's just my opinion. But why else would they not release this? And all we're shown is this viral Facebook video. And again, critical thinkers should question why.
Yeah. And I mean, but I was on with Jack Cashel too. I did a lot of work on this as well. And we were talking about how watching how he was behaving for really seeing it. It's obvious why they hit it, but watching how he was behaving, it humanizes the cops. And that is what they didn't want. They didn't, because anyone watching that, and he's a huge man to be acting like that. And he kept falling on the ground. And like you said, but you also showed prior arrest with almost the exact same behavior. This was his default. This was like his default way. He doesn't want to go back to jail. I get it. But, and whatever else was going on. So how did you find, because I had never seen that before. And I know you did a book prior, which everyone should read the book, because you kind of trace the external influences as well. But that prior arrest, shockingly similar.
Yeah, this is something we're also told the next day. Minneapolis police have never heard of this guy. They've never had anything to do with him. And this was just one of the reasons I was screaming, you know, they're lying, because I obviously knew different. But he was the subject of an undercover drug investigation that happened in 2019. So almost exactly a year before all this. And if you play the body camera footage from that incident next to what transpired in 2020, they are eerily similar. So we wanted to talk to that arresting officer in that case. Officer Scott Creighton is his name, and he spoke to us for the film and talked about his behavior again, exactly the same as what happened in 2020. But just another thing that they lied about, and it's still difficult to this day to, you know, even find mentions of that arrest in 2019. And again, nobody is saying George Floyd deserved to die, and this is right. that's not this documentary at all. It's really just more of here's the whole story. And it's interesting too, you know, I think we're up to like almost 4 million views on the documentary in less than 2 weeks, which has been incredible, which, you know, we're just kind of a nonprofit news agency in Minnesota that put this thing out, but it shows that people are, you know, tired of the lies and want the truth. But also you have the mainstream media here in town that hasn't said anything about the documentary, but yet they are quickly to cover George Floyd's 50th birthday. There were celebrations in town for that, and quick to cover things like that. So it really is remarkable where we are at this point in our country.
Yeah, I think the documentary is very important, whether you know what happened, you feel connected to it or not. It sparked Black Lives Matter marches all over this country. I was in New York City during it. You know, we're in the COVID trauma, the pandemic, as I call it. Then this comes along and all of that. I feel like the documentary is more about what happened to this country, as much as it's right. just the microcosm of George Floyd. And like I'm saying, for the rest of my life, I'm going to have to say, turn on George Floyd Street. You know, and things like this all over the country, or let's go to George Floyd Square, you know, and it's such a contrived, manipulated situation that really is about the manipulation of this nation. And then all of the corporations and all of the DEI and reverse racism and all of CRT, all of this was ushered in on this incident that when you watch it through your thing at the very end of your movie, I felt very sad for America. Not black, yeah. not white, not anything. I felt very sad for our country.
Yeah, and that's what we really wanted to hinge on here too. Is this what we want our justice system to look like? You can go ahead if you have no connection to law enforcement. This isn't a cop story. You know, that's the biggest criticism. Like, how dare you trust someone married to a union president, cop. Yeah. And here's the deal. I mean, this is not something I ever wanted to do. I didn't want to write a book. I didn't want to, you know, put this movie out, but I'm like, we gotta figure this out. And obviously I had a unique perspective. Right. So this needs to be exposed. And I knew that people had the courage to sort of speak up at this time. But I think, you know, Alex King, he's one of the officers, he's serving a 3.5 year prison sentence, his third day on the job, off of field training. And he speaks to that is this what we want? Do we want to be controlled by the mob? Don't fall for this race bait from the media. You know, take a step back and don't be quick to judge, because there was so much more here. And you're right. We're all paying the consequences to this day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, but you know, this actually, I believe this whole movement, I see a lot, I follow the money a lot on my show, and I see the same money that was involved here. And I feel like they were waiting for an incident. I've watched Ben Crump go around. I was very on top of the Trayvon case and what was going on in that. That same lawyer that's gone to every single one of these things, exaggerated. We know by now that all of the evidence came out. There was no white cop war on black criminals going on in America. There is no evidence of this. But it was building up and building up. You know, certainly Obama fueled a lot of that. But if you look at it now and you talk to some of these people, especially people in the black community that have questioned Black Lives Matter or this narrative or anything else, a lot of people in the black community say that the defund the police movement that was spawned from this and then that whole succession of these cases has hurt their community the most. And I also know that where this happened with Cup Foods and all them, they're suing now. But I believe that area and the black community in Minneapolis itself was hurt the most. So you look at this whole thing and you look at this documentary and then you look around at the aftermath. What was accomplished and what was the goal?
Yeah, so we have a whole chapter in the book called The Right Side of History ? And we included that in the film as well, because we're told, if you recall, in the days that follow, we're going to be living on the right side of history, be on the right side of history. Right. You know, this was the mantra. And I've yet to find anyone 3 years later that can actually say we are living on the right side of history. Minneapolis itself, again, kind of a microcosm to other very blue cities in the wake of all of this, what's transpired. Not only losing, hundreds of police officers, but also things like carjackings that never happened. They weren't even tracked in Minneapolis before. They had 600, 700 each year in the wake of all this, skyrocketing homicide rates. Again, things that didn't happen. They're double what they used to be. So for that to be, you know, the mantra, but the problem is too, Mel, that nobody comes out these days. Nobody says, you know what, we were wrong.
Right.
And they still could. And I believe that's the only way this gets better is if people, admit that they were wrong.
100%. And it's not just in this country, we have a serious accountability problem. It goes through everything. You've covered a lot of the same stories as me. I mean, there's just one after another, and there's never anyone held accountable. And if we're never going to, or everyone's held accountable, we're all systematically racist then, or the entire police force is, then nobody's ever held accountable. And we keep allowing this to happen year after year for decades now, quite honestly, in our nation. And it's because we, the people, are allowing it. And I feel like your movie's saying, no, I'm not going to allow it. And people watching it that are being motivated want to turn the tide on this. And I think that this movie is so important because I know what it did to me inside, and I see a lot of this and I follow it. But the way that you traced it and for the first time ever, you humanized Derek Chauvin. And to me, you and I both know, you know, to me, Twitter's a cesspool. I got kicked up. I had to restart over. And so I was off it for 3 years and I didn't really see a lot of this stuff, you know. And then when I was allowed back on, I looked around and I thought, wow. And there's so many people that have no idea what happened and are willing. This is like with the January 6th people, too. And there's a parallel here. But you not only met Chauvin's mother, who's in the documentary, but you also spoke with him. What did you find most surprising about Derek Chauvin and his mom and kind of from their point of view? What did you find that people, because they made him into such a monster and you just kept looking at, they kept looking at the face. But then when you look at the footage that you put out, I think these guys were all nervous too. Like, I mean, it was a chaotic powder keg situation all around, right, including for him. But so what did you find getting to talk to him and his mother?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. As far as, you know, what the media can do to create monsters, it's just, you know, they have that power. But really, he's a small guy. He's kind of shy. Was kind of described as quirky and whatnot. I didn't know him before any of this. And you have George Floyd, who's 6'6", a very large man, and Chauvin, I think, who's 5'6", 5'7". And this is not somebody, he's a very, even people that know him describe him as a very by the book police officer. He'd been an officer in Minneapolis for 19 years. He was in the army as well. And It's really incredible to how he was built up into the most racist police officer. At the time, he's married to an Asian woman. His partner is Hmong American. He'd actually primarily been partnered with minority partners. There's no evidence of anything racial at all in his background. But of course, how dare you speak facts to this? And even his record, I think he had 18 complaints or something in his time on the Minneapolis police force. Well, people are saying, well, that's a lot. And, you know, in reality, again, it's really not much. And he'd never done anything that needed union representation. So obviously he didn't do anything that resulted in needing that. And I think one of his complaints resulted in coaching, and another was like a, you know, some sort of written, but it's just bizarre to me how he turned into the most racist, awful police officer in America, because facts support really anything but. And that's from a lot of people who know him. You know, even talking to him himself, he's actually kind of got a funny personality. And it's again, the power of what the media can do.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's incredibly sad. I mean, you have to, and I hope everyone that hasn't seen this does see it and shares it with their friends and family, because it's really important to understand this point in history. It was such a, it changed everything in this country, and it is not what anyone was told. And then you have to wonder about the powers that be behind it. Because one thing that was very interesting, and now after seeing it and looking at it and watching all the body cam footage of George Floyd, and then watching Chauvin, and knowing how little he is compared to this giant 6'6" guy that's really losing it. It's just hard to believe. And then to see it doesn't even seem plausible what they said. But what you also bring out here is, A, they lied on the stand about that not being a technique. Totally lied. It's totally provable, A, that it is. B, from your footage, as opposed to the footage that Ellison and the media put out, it does look like he's doing the maneuver properly, and that was probably the only option they had other than, you know, a taser or something else, which people say with George Floyd's actual medical history, a taser would have killed him immediately, or something else, or a Narcan if they told him. So there were very little options, and nobody ever gave this guy the benefit of the doubt. And I think it was his face, but he's a cop for 19 years. There's people around yelling at him. I just think he was trying not to make any expression. But let's talk a little bit about what actually happened, because on the stand, it appears that not only did the police chief, but other people lied. And then the cops and his mom showed the manual. That really is. That's one of the biggest. That's probably how they, you know, really more than anything else, manipulated everyone in the jury by saying that that wasn't something they do. Oh, I hope you're enjoying the show. I was just talking on my new Patriot Mobile service. I have to tell you, I'm so excited. They are incredible. They are America first. They align with my values. And you know what? It's unlimited minutes, unlimited text, Wi-Fi calling, unlimited data, high speed, everything that you could use, just like everyone else. We have our time, we have our vote, and we have our money. And the great thing about Patriot Mobile is your service will be exactly the same. Difference with Patriot Mobile is they are an America First company. And what they do is they reinvest their money into causes that matter to me and matter to you and matter to this nation. At Patriot Mobile, those causes are the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, the Constitution, and our children's future. So please go to themelkayshow.com. Patriot Mobile is a partner of ours. Please use the code MELKAY. What I can tell you too is that they are supporting me, and they are supporting creators because they believe in the First Amendment. They believe that censorship is wrong, and they are going to put their money where their mouth is. Do what you can for the creators out there that are doing what I'm doing. Please go to Patriot Mobile, Mel Kay Show. All I can say is thank you so much, guys. Supporting my partners supports me, and Patriot Mobile is absolutely awesome. I checked them out. We're switching to Patriot Mobile, and we hope you do too. Thank you so much.
Yeah, just timeline wise, again, it's the very next day where there's, you know, there's all these press conferences going on, but it's like the mayor can't say enough about this. He can't have enough press conferences as he continues to fan the flames here. Right. That's Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey. But he says right away, this is not, you know, anything authorized by MPD. This is the very, very first day. And I go online and others have as well and put this out there. But there's two pages of the police training manual that are just mysteriously gone, missing. Yeah. So again, this is another, like, you know, they're lying, but the press, of course, is, they're so fearful. So they don't push back and say, well, wait, why are these two pages missing? And everybody sort of knew, but like nobody was willing to report it, which was just crazy to me. And then we have 10 months later, Derek Chauvin's trial happening. And you're right. The police chief, Madera Arredondo, at the time, he's since retired, but he takes the stand under oath, says, doesn't recognize this, not a part of training. The head of training, Inspector Katie Blackwell, says, nope, not a part of training. And then, you know, we bring in Derek Chauvin's own mom, who has his two training manuals. And there's a picture right there of the MRT. And don't forget that they actually say, Tom Lane makes a reference to it with MRE, he calls it. But you can clearly tell they're talking about this maneuver, what to do in this MRT situation, right, in the body camera footage.
Right. Right. It's crazy to see them. And because what you're seeing in that is that they were in a bad position. The cops weren't being, they didn't know what to do. He was out of control. And they were, there were so many, you know, unpredictable behaviors happening with George Floyd going back and forth. And you even hear, you know, what else you have in there that's interesting. And I think people should know about the woman that was with them kept saying to him, just comply, just stop it, calm down. Oh. You know, mm-hmm. and that's something nobody knows either. They certainly don't know the actual behavior, because then you put yourself in the shoes of these cops, and it's hard to believe. Now, also the medical examiner, as we know, you expose a lot of that about the medical examiner, but it turns out that they basically manipulated all of that, and then they got on the stand and they totally told a story. They knew about George Floyd's medical problems before. They knew, and also they knew that he was on drugs to a level that you would overdose, but he had heart problems. I believe he had other problems. So the medical examiner, talk about that story, because at first, because now we had this, I want to get into some of the recent developments, because we have a recent case where a attorney from the prosecution's office has come out and said that she was, she's suing, and she brings up this as well, the medical examiner report and what happened there. So if you could tell my audience that might not have seen it yet, a little bit about the medical examiner and how this is very fishy, and with the FBI, it's weird.
Yeah, no, exactly. And we brought medical professionals in to sort of review these with fresh eyes, and they kind of described George Floyd, you know, as a ticking time bomb.
Right.
But of course, officers don't recognize that. So you have George Floyd's autopsy done within 12 hours of his death by Dr. Andrew Baker. Again, this is withheld from the public. But that autopsy, until about a week later, I should say, that autopsy clearly states that there's three times the lethal limit of fentanyl in his system, methamphetamine. He has 75% blockage of one artery in his heart. There's a tumor that's located that other medical professionals and experts have said clearly required more testing. And many people have pointed to, you know, different issues with the autopsy. But however, the FBI is called in within just hours of his death by the chief. The chief is the one who tells my husband that he brought in the FBI. And Bob was questioning, you know, he didn't really understand. He's never, you know, that had never happened before, right, especially when they hadn't reviewed the body camera footage yet, and they knew very, very little. So you have these meetings that take place behind closed doors, and we know this because it's publicly documented and part of the public documents related to this case. But you have Dr. Baker and meeting with prosecutors over and over again, and the FBI is sitting in on these meetings as well. And you see this narrative kind of change a bit. Again, Dr. Baker's own words, if he was found anywhere else, this would be called an overdose. No strangulation marks, there's no bruising on George Floyd's neck, no asphyxiation, et cetera. So you have the actual official autopsy finally released about a week later, long after, you know, many businesses had burned to the ground. People were killed in the rioting in Minneapolis, obviously across the country as well. And it's released on the same day that George Floyd's family releases their own autopsy that the media touts as an independent autopsy. Which is anything but another conversation where I'm saying, why are we calling this independent? This is not an independent autopsy. And even these medical examiners that they hired say that they, you know, did not have toxicology results at that time, and this could change. And it's so clouded and just crazy. But you also have Dr. Baker, who testifies in a grand jury proceeding, that he simply asked in that, you know, were you under any pressure, you know, to do this autopsy, or or you know, to come to a certain conclusion. And he himself says, as part of that, I need to take a break and consult with my attorney before answering that question. So I think that that speaks volumes as well. And he came back 2 hours later to answer that question after talking to his attorney. So there's just so much here timeline wise. And I can talk to what you're speaking of too, some public documents that were related to this sexual harassment lawsuit filed by Amy Sweetsy. She was the longtime prosecutor within the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, but she handled use of force cases for the Minneapolis Police Department and had successfully, went ahead and convicted officers in the past. She herself said, there is nothing here to charge these three other cops. I don't feel comfortable. It's not morally right. It's not ethically right. So she withdraws from the case. So she is suing Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman is his name, and does these depositions as part of that case. And this is how we know all of this now, because those recently became public. But she is having a conversation with Dr. Baker 12 hours, as I said, just with the timeline. And he says to her, Amy, what happens when the findings don't match the conclusion the public has already come to? And basically says, this is the kind of case that ends careers. And so Amy Sweetsy recites that as part of this deposition. So you can clearly see all of the outside pressure that they're facing. And this is also when you have Attorney General Keith Ellison sort of swoop in, the AG of Minnesota, and take over the case. And he leads the prosecution of all four officers.
Right. And not just the FBI, but it appears that other people in Washington, D.C. got involved too, including Eric Holder. And you have to kind of now take a step back and look at the timeline. And again, this isn't black, white, Asian, Indian. It's got nothing to do with that. It's got to do with truth and you know, what is true and what is false and what it did to this country. Because to me, I look at Keith Ellison and I look at his trajectory, everything that I watched him do over the years, his whole involvement in everything. And also I followed Benjamin Crump from the beginning during the Trayvon case and all of that. And it appears to me that this was an opportunity. I hate to say this, and we don't want to think this. And, you know, I say whatever I want, which is why I get censored a lot, which is okay. But they were waiting for this to happen. I don't know. There was a lot of conspiracy theories, which I'm very glad that you put it together in a way that it's like, okay, these are the facts. Let's just stick with the facts alone of this case are terrible. I mean, they're bad enough. We don't even have to go beyond this. But the damage done to this nation, and again, we're going to be reminded unless things change for the rest of our lives, because you're going to see in front of courthouses all over this country statues of George Floyd. And it's a lie. And they're forcing our country to accept a lie that it's damaging to the core of not just our current status, but our future status of who are we and what are we as a nation. So Keith Ellison gets involved, and you kind of trace a little bit of his background there, especially connections to, he was openly affiliated with Antifa. He showed it himself. He was very Black Lives Matter. He was very, very supportive of that too. He was openly affiliated with a lot of gang cases, all of that. I know, obviously, him and Ilhan Omar. But I think one of the biggest things that was disturbing, and you said, like, the George Floyd family somehow afforded an independent autopsy. The city of Minneapolis settled for $27 million with the Floyd family during jury selection. How is this even possible? Ellison came out, announced it, you know, Benjamin Crump standing there. They're all very exciting. This seems to me that of everything that happened, that seems to me to be the most likely to force an appeal. But what are your thoughts on that? Because what we learned, and I don't think it's a coincidence at all, right after a fall of Minneapolis came out, as most people know, the Supreme Court turned down looking at the appeal for Derek Chauvin.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that part of it, because when they made that settlement for $27 million, that had to have been way bigger than George Floyd or his family. And then at the same time, how can you possibly have a fair trial when that's, you know, you're not supposed to read the news and stuff when you're a jury?
Yeah. Oh, it definitely sent a message. I mean, you better find this guy guilty or else. I mean, I think everybody would share that opinion, just timeline wise. And not only that, you have Keith Ellison's son, Jeremiah Ellison, who is still a city council member in Minneapolis. He is the one tasked with basically finalizing the details of that settlement. It was his case. I mean, talk about a conflict of interest of some sort. But really, it really, I think, sent a message. There were so many messages sent to the jury, obviously, you know, paraded in and out of that courtroom each and every day in Hennepin County that has barbed wire all around it. There's National Guardsmen standing right there, large crowds, you know, chanting and shouting every day. It's not a jury that's sequestered. But yeah, the timing of all of this is troubling with the U.S. Supreme Court. It was about 4 days later that they came out and said that they would not take the case. But then you had nearly 8 days later that Derek Chauvin is stabbed in prison. And there's a lot to be said about that, too. So, yeah.
Well, just what do you make of that? Because I mean, we've seen too much of this, and I hate to say that it's reminiscent of Jeffrey Epstein, but it is. And then the reason that it is because I look back and I remember Derek Chauvin, and I was covering it at the time, and he said to the Floyd family, he said, there's things you don't know that will eventually come out. I don't know what he was talking about, but he seemed very sorry, in my opinion. It wasn't fake. He seemed very rattled, but he seemed to know that there would be an appeal because there was information that was not allowed in. And so what do you know exactly? Was he trying to say what you guys are putting out there? Is there more to this story? What would they be afraid of, Derek Chauvin, saying now? Or, I mean, maybe you don't know, but it just seems too coincidental. This seems very much like what happened with, you know, trying to get rid of somebody that has something else to say.
Yeah, he in that moment was referring to pleading guilty. He thought that this would maybe give the family peace then if he pleads guilty to the federal case. I mean, as Derek said in the movie, he thought that this was a sham, but he also saw the writing on the wall in a way and knew that, you know, this was just going to be the way it is, sadly. But he, so he went ahead and pled guilty in order to go to have a chance of going to a federal facility that would be more of a medium security risk. So, you know, it wouldn't be him in solitary confinement each and every day, like he'd spent a year in, you know, a Minnesota prison in solitary. So we know that he's stable after this stabbing, but what's really troubling, and I'm not surprised, but the media should have been asking, why is it that the man who put him behind bars in the first place, that would be Attorney General Keith Ellison, how is he the very first one that's contacted about his stabbing? How is he the spokesperson for that he's in stable condition and that he's expected to survive? Keep in mind that the Attorney General of Minnesota is called before his own mother or before anyone in his family. Keith Ellison knew days before anyone else connected to Derek as far as his family is concerned about this stabbing. So to me, that it's all you know, very, very suspect, but nobody seems to want to bring that part up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the most disturbing thing is, so this came out, and I thought, and then I mean everyone I think that had watched it or I talked to, like, their hearts were broken. What do you have any idea what happened at the Supreme Court?
They didn't actually even release any sort of, you know, decision as to why they did not take it. So we don't actually know. They did think his appeal attorneys handling his appeal now did think this was a bit of a long shot, since the U.S. Okay. Supreme Court, you know, takes like 2% of the cases that they are petitioned with every year. But there are some, you know, with this new evidence coming out, as we've talked about these depositions, there are some new things that they are exploring. And I will say that, you know, the movie has helped in a way. I think just people are comfortable talking about this now. Like, exactly. Good God, you couldn't even bring it up before without. And that's what I say, too. You know, we may not. Obviously, voting is important. Supporting our men and women in blue, that's important. All things that we can do, but we can also, I think, change hearts and minds with facts. And the facts are on our side. Obviously, about this and many other things. So don't be afraid to actually, you know, get people to watch this thing, because I've actually heard, and I will say it takes a lot for people to actually seek me out and and tell me that it has changed their mind. But I've heard from a lot of people that have said just that.
Well, I'm telling you at the very end, because I want to ask you about the movie itself, but at the very end, I felt sad for the entire country. I didn't feel I was sad. You know, it's terrible that he has died, and it's all way. I mean, that those Derek Chauvin is I look like they sacrificed him in a lot of ways, but those other cops do not belong in there. They are young guys that didn't deserve this. They didn't do anything wrong. And it's just a narrative, I believe, more than anything else. Now, let me ask you a little bit about, because it was very brave of you, anyone like me or you that speaks out about this kind of stuff that are bucking the controlled narrative and the information, the disinformation, misinformation, fact-checking class get attacked. When this came, first of all, was it you guys put it out independently yourselves. So that was a decision to put it out there that way. What has there been any backlash? Have you guys been threatened? Has there been, because you already went through the cancel culture. So you have a thicker skin than most people. I mean, you're an anchor on a TV news, obviously. And then this happens and, you and your husband have been through it. So most people couldn't handle it, but what has happened in on that front?
Yeah. Amazingly, I feel like I should knock on something. I would say it's been almost, 90% positive, if not even more. We chose to make this free. The truth should be free. And we put it on Rumble for people to see. You can watch this or you don't have to watch it either. And as I said, no media coverage at all locally, of course, just pretending it didn't happen. But it also goes to show, again, the power that people have in all of this. But no, it's actually been, there's obviously I'm called names and I've always had a pretty thick skin doing this for a living. So that doesn't bother me at all, but nobody is disputing the facts and that speaks volumes, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I went to school for journalism and worked in that world for a while. And I know you did too. And you worked in the world for 20 years. What do you make of the lack of journalists willing to actually cut their teeth and make a name for themselves, actually reporting the truth as compared to what is going on? I'm not sure if it was the culling of the herd inside the newsrooms or maybe even inside the journalism programs in the universities or whatever. But when we're around the same age, I'm sure when you went to school and I went to school, it was like two sources. You have to double, triple check everything. There were standards. Now I'm looking, and I even looked recently into some of these journalism programs, especially one of the main ones that then influenced the other universities. I call it now the poison Ivy League, but certainly Columbia University's journalism program is one of the biggest, and it's totally woke, and it's totally, they have full classes on conspiracy theories and disinformation. When did you see this happen? I mean, did you, because you were on the front lines. I had gone to Hollywood and gone into film and TV way before this really started taking cover, that there was really, what happened to journalism? Was it internal, external? What do you think?
Yeah, just from my own experience, I've worked in, I think, 8 different or somewhere around there, television stations before jumping into independent media. But it was really, I kind of always say, like the, last 5 or 6 years. Journalists now have turned into activists. They come out of these very liberal. And here's the thing, I never even considered myself a political person. I'll be quite honest. I always felt like as a journalist, you're supposed to fairly represent both sides. But then this sort of turned into, before my eyes, kind of a fight against evil. I felt like, and I was really having a problem, on a moral level, being a Christian and such, poisoning the public about so many things that I knew that were not true. And that's supposed to be our job. We're supposed to seek the truth. And I also think that we've created a generation now, where there's a lot of narcissism. It seemed like reporters were more worried about putting what outfit they were wearing, on social media than actually cared about, fact-checking their script. So that I think kind of has been a bit of an obstacle as well. But in this instance, I saw it very, very close that people were afraid they're not going to go against the mob, but more so they fell for it. I mean, you had reporters using the hashtag Black Lives Matter. You know, they were, I talk about this in the book, they're lying, but I talked about how after George Floyd, there's a mandate put in place at the station where I'm working that half the people we interview have to be non-white or from a protected class. So we are actually implementing racism in the newsroom.
Oh, yeah.
In my opinion, that's the definition of racism. And I'm the only one saying, this is nuts. What are we doing? Even though I know a lot of people would agree with me, but they wouldn't say that out loud like I would.
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, but this happened all the that's why I'm saying I feel like if you look at the trajectory from Hands Up, Don't Shoot through George Floyd, you look at the money behind it, because it's this globalist billionaire oligarchy that I say all the time, like these guys are funding everything. These uprisings, these, you know, now we're with the Palestinian, you know, ceasefire movement. There's going to be one coming up, I'm sure, with a demand citizenship, because I watch these NGOs. They have nice names and they sound like they're all for good. But I'm telling you, and I tell my audience all the time, they're not. They are globalists. They are for the controlled demolition of America, and slicing and dicing us into oppressed and oppressor. And the more they can do that, the more they can get us to a place where we are not functioning. And at this point, we seem very captured, which is why your project is something that I believe is a narrative breaker, which is what we have to do. They are putting out narratives one after another. And it's really important that people support your work and people like you. I mean, this was a tremendous, and the quality is so good. And this is the other thing I want to say to you and thank you for. People believe that outside, I left Hollywood and you left the mainstream newsroom. People, and Lara Logan's a friend of mine doing the same thing. People believe that they can't do it outside of the centralized controlled system where your biggest goal is to get invited to the Council of Foreign Relations if you get it on a really good news desk, you know, or something like that. And it's like, it can be done, you know? And I wanted to just talk about that before I let you go is, you decided that it can be done and you did it and you proved it, because now we need to kind of decentralize and start producing things like what you did in the newsroom. In the news realm, because we don't have the Datelines on our side. We don't have the 60 Minutes on our side. We don't have, mainstream media is fully captured with this globalist, activist thing. So what you're doing is leading the way to a new model that I think has to be the future model of truth and of actual news. So just talk a little bit about that, that you felt like you had to do this. You didn't, I mean, obviously, from your background, you're thinking, well, who am I going to get to produce this? How am I going to put it together? You just did it. And I think people need to understand that we need to just start doing this stuff. So just talk a little bit about the production side and how you just like approached it.
No, thank you for the kind words, sir. That's very nice of you. I don't know if I'm leading the way, but
you are.
I will say, though, that there's so many people out there that complaining is easy. This was something that I knew I could do. Here's the thing. It's not like we're making millions of dollars. This is a free film. We volunteered our time basically to put it out there because it is that important. And I think to capture people's attention, you do have to do a more high quality, product, right. Certainly, but there was really just three of us that did this. Myself as the producer, Dr. J.C. Shea is the name of the director and writer, and he was instrumental in the book. And then we have a very young, raw kid who was very good with editing and the soundtrack, and he shot the film. So this is not,
great.
It was a crowdfunded effort. We begged for money for a couple months, raised the funds, and we did it. So, but again, just to speaking to the fact that, you know, nearly 4 million people have watched this thing already, it is needed and it's possible. It's not impossible.
No, and like you said, you know, there's a lot of people out there that will do it and do want to tell the truth. You just have to find those people. I really think that this is the future. I see totally mainstream media, all of that is falling apart, and a lot more people would rather find you on Rumble. And I know they're going after Rumble now and all of that, but I don't think it's going to work. But I think that you're a real inspiration. There's a lot of people out there with a lot of stories to tell, especially over the last, since the beginning of George Floyd and the COVID and all of this. There are so many stories out there that need to be told. And I do believe that you're inspiring and leading the way for other people out there to pick up their crew and get around and be like, okay, let's tell our story. You know, look at what they did. We can do that too. It's the fall of Minneapolis. Can you tell people where to find you, how to follow you, and also what's upcoming? Are you going to continue down this path of exposing?
Yeah, I can't be done.
Can't be done yet.
So it's thefallofminneapolis.com. That's the website. There's more information there about the movie, how to watch it, and the book as well. Again, that's They're Lying, the Media, the Left, and the Death of George Floyd. But I work for a place called Alpha News. AlphaNews.org is the name. We're a nonprofit, so you can just sign up for free. You get an email every day. It's all a lot of the Minnesota insanity. There's a lot of it here in this state. But
it's not done, you know?
No, certainly not. And I'm just Liz Collin on X. You can look me up there. But I really appreciate the opportunity talking about this. And I can't thank you enough for all you've done.
Thank you.
But that's what it takes. You just have to, you know, show up, stand up, and speak up. That's what somebody told me once at one of these book events I did, a farmer from Minnesota. And I think that's a great saying that I use a lot.
I agree. And you know what? God gave you some great talent and your whole team. You guys are the raw talent of it all is on top of that. God gives people what they need. And you used it. And I really appreciate it. I really don't think that this has even begun to get out there on the level it would and it will and should. So thank you so much, Liz. I'm a huge fan of your work and your bravery. And God bless you and your family. Appreciate it.
Right back at you. God bless. Thanks, Mel.
Bye-bye. The narrative is falling apart, but as it does, there's so much of this fraudulent disinformation, misinformation, censorship coming from the globalists. And what we need to do is be focused on the facts, cut through everything, be discerning, and get it first and foremost out there to everyone. It is important that you know what is going on. Censorship is getting nuts. You guys know it. There's accounts all over the place that are fake, that are not me. I know you guys send me emails and I really appreciate it. And you report it and it's on Telegram and Instagram and Twitter and they're not me. So I'm super excited to announce We the People with Mel Kay. Be the first to join. It's a VIP community, just you and me behind a paywall, no trolls, no nothing. We get to know each other. I will give you the facts first. I break a lot of stories a long time before other people. We can talk about past, present, future, history, what we're doing now, solutions for going forward, what 2024 is going to look like. I'm going to do breaking news, do a lot of deep dives. I'm going to bring that information to you guys first in a live Q&A every week. So please click the link below and join me over there. We are going to create a community that is censorship proof. It's cancel proof. It's truth. It's transparency. It's on the road to God, country, justice, everything that we want in one place. This is the most incredible, amazing time to be alive. As hard as it seems and as difficult as the battle has been for you guys and definitely for me, all I know is that we all are part of the solution. We are all involved and invested, and you guys have the passion that I have. So let's join together on live Q&As once a week with me, Mel Kay, we the people of the United States, taking back this nation. This is so exciting, guys. I've been dying to do this, and we finally got the technology right. So please join me. Click the link below. Can't wait to get started. I don't know about you, but I feel a lot better being prepared for whatever's coming. Every day I hear something new. Something's coming from the CDC. Something's coming from the FDA. Who's trying to take over our healthcare system? All this craziness. And what I know is that one man really changed my life, how I look at everything that's happening to me health-wise. And that was Dr. Zelenko. He was a good friend of mine, a good friend of the show. And he came up with the most amazing product. Z-Stack has been a game changer for us. We have not been sick since we've been on it. We take it regularly. If we feel like we're coming down with something, we'll double up. But he has all new products over at the website. God rest his soul. He did not leave us unprepared. And that is very important for you to prepare. So he's got Z-Shield. He's got a kid's Z-Stack, which is awesome. He's got Z-Flu, Z-Detox. He's got all kinds of things. He always said to me, your immune system must be clean, resilient, and resistant. This matters the most. And what I can say on top of that is that he supported me. He supported free speech. He supported medical freedom. He supported personal liberty and everything that I believe in, he believed in. He inspired me to be myself, to speak up, to speak out. And what matters is that you are feeling healthy, whole, clean, clear, focused, and that your immune system is protected from anything that comes our way. And Z-Stack is the best way to do that. Please stock up on Z-Stack. Go to themelkshow.com. Go to our partners page. Goes down to Z-Stack. That also supports the show. When you buy from our partners, these great people, especially Dr. Zelenko, who is dear to me, you are supporting the show and keeping us going. And I know that truth, freedom, and the First Amendment matter to you. They matter to him. They matter to me. So make sure you're always healthy. You're always out there. You're always standing up. Be brave. Courage is contagious.